afraid of the dark? Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Welcome to episode 38. I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
How are we doing?
Well, I have a toothache, so...
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
I'm exhausted.
I'm sorry.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into this. Hopefully it's not too long. It's a lot of history for this one.
Okay.
So here are five fun facts about mansions.
Mansions.
Five fun facts. Number one, the word mansion has its root in Latin from the term mansio, which basically means a place to live or hang out. Back in the day, it was used to talk about the fancy homes of the rich and powerful.
Hmm.
Number two, mansions are usually famous for being huge. Even though there's no specific size that officially makes a place a mansion, they're often way more than 5,000 square feet and can be much larger. Some well-known mansions even brag about having tens of thousands of square feet.
Wow, that's unnecessary.
Yeah, way too much. Number three, mansions can sport various architectural styles ranging from Gothic and Victorian to modern and contemporary. The design of each mansion can reveal a lot about the time it was built and the preferences of the people who owned it.
Yeah.
Number four, lots of old houses are open for the public to check out, and they're definitely worth a visit. Take the Biltmore Estate, for instance, the biggest privately owned home in the U.S. It's made to look like a French Renaissance chateau and has a whopping 250 rooms, 65 fireplaces,
damn,
an indoor pool, and even a bowling alley. That is crazy.
That's a lot of unnecessary space.
That will probably never be used.
Or it was used one time.
Yeah. Number five. Certain mansions have pretty creepy histories and are left deserted now. Take the Los Feliz murder mansion in L.A., for instance. It's got a serious dark past involving some of the most gruesome murders in history. That'd be an awesome place to do an episode on. Yeah. Now let's stay at this infamous mansion turned bed and breakfast and eat at its fine dining restaurant. I got most of this info from legendsofamerica.com, limpmansion.com, and of course Wikipedia. The Limp Mansion in St. Louis, Missouri is known to be one of the top 10 most haunted places in America. The mansion used to be the lavish home of millionaires, but later turned into a run-down boarding house and office space. Currently, it has been restored and transformed into a fine dinner theater, restaurant, and bed and breakfast where you can enjoy a great time.
That's cool.
The Limp Mansion started when Johann Adam Limp came to St. Louis from Eschwege, Germany in 1838. He opened a little grocery store at Delmar and 6th Streets and started selling everyday household items, groceries, and his homemade beer. People liked his light golden lager beer more than the dark ones that were sold at the time. The recipe was so popular that he gave up the grocery store just 2 years later and built a small brewery in 1840, close to where the Gateway Arch stands today.
Wow.
Limp started selling his beer in a pub that was attached to the brewery. He introduced St. Louis to its first ever lager, but soon Limp realized that the brewery was too small to handle the production and storage of beer, so he found a limestone cave outside the city limits, located at Cherokee and DeMille Place. By using ice from the near nearby Mississippi River, the cave could be kept cool, which made it perfect for the lagering process, which I find very fascinating.
Yeah.
Limp's Western Brewing Company grew rapidly and became one of the largest in the city by the 1850s. And guess what? The beer even won the first prize in the St. Louis Fair in 1858. Adam Limp was a millionaire when he passed away on August 25th, 1862. His son, William, took over the brewery and made it even bigger. He bought a 5-block area near the storage house on Cherokee above the lagering caves. In 1864, a new plant was built at Cherokee Street and Carondelet Avenue. They kept expanding the brewery to keep up with the demand, and it eventually covered 5 city blocks. That's crazy.
Yeah, wow.
By the 1870s, the Limp family was super rich and powerful. They controlled the beer market in St. Louis and kept it up until Prohibition. Jacob Feichert, William Limp's father-in-law, got a house built close to the Limp Brewery in 1868. William Limp later bought it in 1876 to use it as his family residence and also as an office. The house was already cool, but Limp wanted to make it even better, so he started doing a lot of renovations and added more rooms to make it a real Victorian gem. The mansion had a secret tunnel that was built from the basement through the caves and to the brewery.
Hey, that's kind of handy.
Yeah. They used parts of the cave for other stuff like a theater and a natural auditorium when they got mechanical refrigeration. Later, they also made a big swimming pool with hot water piped in from the brewery, boiling house, and even a bowling alley.
Heated pool's nice, but bowling alley is unnecessary because bowling sucks.
Yep. I like it, but I know you don't. You could even get down to the theater from Cherokee Street using a cool spiral staircase. In the 1890s, the Limp Brewery became famous after introducing its popular beer called Falstaff, which is still brewed by another company today. They were the first brewery to distribute their beer all over the country. Besides, William Sr. was also helping other companies like Pabst, Anheuser, and Busch to get started while building his own business empire. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
In the middle of their success, the Limp family went through some serious tough times. First off, in 1901, Frederick Limp, who was the much-loved son and expected to take over from his dad, William Sr., died at just 28 because of heart failure.
That's sad.
Yeah. Poor Frederick had always battled with his health. This hit William Limp hard, and he pretty much stepped back from the public life, hardly showing his face after his son's passing. Then, in 1904, things got even more rough. William's close buddy, Frederick Pabst, passed away on January 1st. This hit William hard emotionally, and he sort of checked out from running the brewery. Even though he kept going to the office every day, he got more and more on edge. His physical and mental health took a nosedive, and on February 13th, 1904, he tragically ended his own life by shooting himself in the head with a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson.
That's sad.
Yeah. In November 1904, William Limp Jr. became the new president of the William J. Limp Brewing Company, taking charge of the family business and a considerable fortune. He and his wife Lillian started enjoying their newfound wealth. They filled their homes with servants and indulged in lavish spending on carriages, clothing, and art. Lillian was a stunning lady with a rich background of her own. She tied the knot with William Limp Jr. in 1899, and they welcomed William J. Limp III on September 26, 1900. Lillian became famous as the Lavender Lady because she was all about that color. She didn't stop at just wearing lavender. Even her carriage horse harnesses were dyed in the same shade. At first, Will loved flaunting his trophy wife, but he was a bit of a player. Growing up with a silver spoon up his ass, in his mouth, he was used to doing things his way. William got bored with his gorgeous wife and asked her to shop more often. He gave her $1,000 a day, warned her that she wouldn't get any more if she didn't spend it all.
$1,000 a day?
A day, and she had to spend it all in one day. Every day. Just so he can fuck around.
Wow.
Meanwhile, Will kept himself occupied managing the brewery by day and engaging in various indulgent activities at night. He threw extravagant parties in the caves beneath the mansion, inviting numerous sex workers for the entertainment of his friends. With a swimming pool, bowling alley, and plenty of beer on tap, attendees at these events were known to have a good time in the underground space. Will faced the consequences of his actions when he fathered a son with a woman other than his wife. To this day, there is no official documentation acknowledging the existence of this boy. However, persistent rumors suggest that he was kept hidden in the mansion attic throughout his life.
Jesus.
According to St. Louis historian Joe Gibbons, interviews with a former nanny and a chauffeur who worked at the mansion corroborated the boy's existence. He resided in the attic quarters alongside the servants' rooms, a result of Will's affair with either one of the many sex workers or a mansion servant. Born with Down syndrome, the boy became a source of embarrassment for the Limp family. In an attempt to conceal his perceived shame, he was kept away from the public eye, referred to this day as the, quote, monkey face boy. That's sad. His lingering presence is said to be felt at the Limp Mansion.
Fucking wealthy people that think, like, whether you're wealthy or not, if you think like that, you're a fucking disgusting human being. And I understand it was a different time and things weren't understood the way that they are now, but I just don't understand how people are so quick to lose their humanity when someone's different. It's like, makes me so angry.
It's ridiculous. Eventually, in 1908, William Jr. grew weary of his trophy wife and initiated divorce proceedings. The fact that she hadn't taken this step earlier could be attributed to the norms of the time. The divorce proceedings became a prominent St. Louis scandal, grabbing extensive front page coverage from all four major newspapers in the city. The trial kicked off in February 1909, drawing crowds of the courthouse eager to witness the drama unfold, featuring tales of violence, drunkenness, atheism, and cruelty.
Oh no, not atheism.
He wasn't a Christian. Interestingly, Lillian almost overlooked William's indulgent lifestyle, nearly lost custody of William Limp III due to a photograph presented during the trial showing her smoking a cigarette.
Oh, the scandal.
So scandalous. Despite this, she managed to retain custody of their son but chose to step away from the public eye. The only exception was the final day of the divorce proceedings when she appeared before the judge entirely in black, deviating from her usual lavender attire. Following the divorce, Will encountered new challenges. In 1906, nine prominent breweries in the St. Louis area joined forces to establish the Independent Breweries Company, intensifying competition that the Limp Brewery hadn't previously encountered. Concurrently, Will's mother passed away on April 16th, of the same year after battling cancer. The brewery was going down and the Limp Mansion was remodeled in 1911 and some parts of it were turned into offices for the brewery, but William didn't keep up with the industry innovations and let the company's equipment deteriorate. By the time of World War I, the brewery was just barely staying afloat. William built a country home on the Merrimack River and started to spend more time there. Of course, you know, spend all your money building other stuff other than keeping up with your business.
I mean, that's what good businessmen do, isn't it? Look at Donald Trump.
Yeah. In 1915, he married Ellie Lindbergh, who was the widowed daughter of Caspar Kohler, a late St. Louis brewer. In 1919, the era of Prohibition dawned, significantly impacting the fate of the Limp Brewery. Already financially secure, the individual family members lacked the motivation to sustain the brewery. Initially, Will held onto the hope that Congress would repeal the Will held onto hope that Congress would repeal prohibition, but eventually he conceded and abruptly shut down the limp plant without prior notice. When the workers arrived one day, they discovered the doors sealed and the gates locked. It's crazy.
Yeah.
On March 20th, 1920, Elsa Limp Wright, William's sister and the wealthiest heiress in St. Louis, tragically took her own life, mirroring the fate of her father years earlier. Elsa's despair was attributed to her shitty marriage. In an effort to recoup some value, William Jr. liquidated the plant's assets and auctioned off the buildings. In 1922, he sold the renowned Limp Falstaff logo to brewer Joseph Grisadike for $25,000. The brewery buildings found a new owner in the International Shoe Company, which acquired them for $588,000. Only a fraction of their estimated worth, which had been $7 million in the years leading up to Prohibition. Following the decline of the Limp Brewing dynasty, William J. spiraled into a deep depression. Much like his father, he grew increasingly anxious and unpredictable, withdrawing from public life and frequently complaining about his health. On December 29, 1922, William took his own life by shooting himself in the heart with a .38 caliber revolver in the same building where his father had died 18 years earlier. His suicide occurred on the main level of the mansion, just inside the entrance to the left, which had served as his office. He had laid to rest in the family mausoleum at Bellefontaine Cemetery in the crypt just above his sister Elsa.
It's a lot of suicides in one family.
Yeah. They say it was a curse. Because it's always a curse.
Mm-hmm.
With William Jr.'s passing and his brothers Charles and Edwin having long departed from the family business, it appeared that the Limp Empire had reached its conclusion. Edwin had embraced a life of seclusion at his estate in Kirkwood, Missouri, since 1911, while Charles, who had never been involved in the brewery, opted for a career in banking and real estate. In 1943, another tragedy struck when William Limp III passed away from a heart attack at the age of 42. Following this, Brother Charles undertook the task of transforming the mansion back into a residence. He lived there with two servants and the illegitimate child of his late brother, William. As Charles aged, he too became an eccentric figure. Battling a morbid fear of germs, he had adopted obsessive-compulsive behaviors like always wearing gloves to avoid bacteria and frequently washing his hands. During this period, William's illegitimate child, now in his 30s, passed away at the mansion and was laid to rest on the Limp Cemetery plot with a modest flat marker bearing the word Limp. Shortly after the death of this individual known as the, quote, monkey face boy.
He doesn't have a name?
I couldn't find the name. They just called him monkey face boy. That's tragic. Charles became the fourth member of the Limp family to take his own life. He initiated the tragic sequence by shooting his cherished Doberman Pinscher in the mansion's basement, then ascended the staircase to his second floor room. He turned the gun on himself. Charles was discovered on May 10th, 1949 by one of his staff members, still gripping a .38 caliber Army Colt revolver in his right hand. Notably, the dog was found shot in the basement halfway up the stairs. Edwin Limp was the only one among the Limps who didn't follow the tragic path of his family. He was known for being reserved and reclusive, and he distanced himself from the Limp Brewery way back in 1913. He chose to live a peaceful life on a secluded estate in Kirkwood, Missouri. On account of natural causes, he passed away in 1970 when he was 90. Edwin's butler did as he was instructed by burning all the paintings the Limps had collected over the years, along with tons of important family papers and artifacts. That's kind of sketch.
Yeah.
All of those priceless pieces of history were destroyed in a raging bonfire. Sadly, Edwin's passing marked the end of the Limp family line. They were buried in the peaceful Bellefontaine Cemetery. After Charles Limp died, the mansion was sold and turned into a boarding house. Over time, the building started to fall apart and the neighborhood around it wasn't much better. Soon enough, rumors started to spread about the hauntings there. People talked about hearing ghostly knocks and phantom footsteps throughout the house. As these stories got around, fewer and fewer people wanted to live there, and it became more and more run down. Eventually, it was barely better than a flop house. A flop house is a cheap hotel or boarding house with minimal amenities. It's a place for people who have no home and very little money. And now for the hauntings. Back in 1975, a guy named Dick Pointer and his family bought an old mansion, which was about to be demolished. They turned it into a restaurant and inn after renovating it. However, the workers in the house often experienced strange things like apparitions, vanishing tools, and feeling of being watched, which made them quit the job. Since the restaurant opened, the staff members have reported many paranormal activities like apparitions, flying glasses, doors locking and unlocking by themselves, and lights turning on and off. The piano bar often plays by itself when no one is near it. The building is said to be haunted by several members of the Limp family, and the stairway, the attic, and the gates of hell in the basement are the areas with the most activity. The gates of hell are the entrance to the caves that run below the mansions and the brewery. The attic is believed to be haunted by William Jr.'s illegitimate son, known simply as... I'm not going to say it again. I wish I could find his name. Born with Down syndrome, this unfortunate individual spent his life confined to the attic of the Limp Mansion. Unusual events are frequently reported on this third floor level of the mansion. Passersby have claimed to catch glimpses of the boy's face from the street, peering through the small windows of the mansion. In attempts to document paranormal activity, ghost investigators have placed toys in the center of the room, marking a circle around them to detect any movement. Upon revisiting the next day, the toys consistently appear in different locations, adding to the mysterious occurrences associated with the attic. That'd be pretty wild. Having set something in a circle and it moved to a different place. Some women have reported seeing a man peeking over the stall in the downstairs women's bathroom. This bathroom used to be William Jr.'s personal domain, and it was the first freestanding shower ever built in St. Louis. One time, one of the women who had just came out of the bathroom went back to the bar and said to the two men she was with, "I hope you got an eyeful," but the two men denied ever leaving the bar, which the bartender confirmed. Folks say that this ghost is actually William Jr., who was a bit of a womanizer. In the room once belonging to William Limp Sr., guests have frequently recounted hearing what sounds like someone rushing up the stairs and kicking at the door. This eerie experience is reminiscent of the tragic events surrounding William's suicide. When William Jr. discovered his father's lifeless body, he urgently ascended the stairs to his father's room, faced a locked door. He resorted to kicking it in, desperately trying to reach his father. The echoes of this distressing moment seem to linger in the reports of phantom sounds in the room. A few years back, a tour guide who worked part-time claimed to have heard hoarse sounds from outside the room where William Limp Sr. once kept his office, but when the guide looked through the window, there was nothing to be seen. The area is now used as a parking lot, was once a place where horses were tied. The mansion has been featured in many magazines and newspapers, and now it's a hotspot for ghost hunters from all over the country. Today, it's a bed and breakfast with rooms that have been restored to their original period style. You can also enjoy some fancy dining at the restaurant, and if you're into mysteries, there's a dinner theater that you'll love. You can also take tours at the mansion. And that is the Limp Mansion. Yeah, it's supposed to be really haunted, and it'd be fun to visit there.
Yeah.
If we could afford the dinner, it'd be a really great place to eat.
Have you seen a menu?
Yeah, it's like $50 a plate. Or 25 or 50, I can't remember. Still.
Maybe yeah. Someday.
Yeah. I think that was a pretty good story.
Yeah. Sorry I wasn't more
peppy. I know. Your tooth hurts and it's time for bed.
Yeah. So.
All right. If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com. Email me anything, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at afraidishpodcast. Tell me what haunted location you want to hear about or any paranormal thing. All the links will be in the show notes. I have this on YouTube as audio. You can listen almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. You can now support this show with a small monthly donation to help us sustain future episodes. This will help with updating recording equipment and other necessities for the podcast. Then hopefully I'll have a Patreon. The link for that will be in the show notes. I'm still working on our merch store, and hopefully that would be pretty cool. Exploring the unknown and mysterious is always interesting, just like trying a new flavor of an adult beverage. Like a cryptid, the taste may be unfamiliar initially, but discovering something unique and exciting makes it worth the adventure. Until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye. Heated pool's nice, but bowling alley is unnecessary because bowling sucks.
Yep. I like it, but I know you don't.